theories have an interpretation as
the 6D theory on sigma on the surface. Sometimes it's useful to think about it as having very long tubes, semi-infinite tubes. And going from the 6D theory to the 4D theory, it's a potentially hard operation. Because the 6D theory is not classical. So, for example, the trinion theories are very hard to describe as 4D theory. We saw that for C2, there was a simple description in terms of C2, C to the A, but for all other groups, it becomes very hard. Now, one thing you could do is to compile an extra circle and get 3D theories. So now we are thinking about the 6D theory. On sigma times a circle. Notice that along these semi-infinite tubes, you have two circles. So this 3D theory is really naturally thought of as coupled to n copies of 4D superyamidals. So in a sense, if you squint, you can map this picture to a picture like this, where you have some 3D object which talks to 4D superyamidals. But this n equals 4 superyamidals, with group G. As I was discussing, sometimes if you invert the whole of the two circles, you can go from a hard problem to an easy problem. So we go to this theory by first going to 4D and then find a circle. We can try to do the opposite. When you reduce on a circle first, you're going to get 5D. This is too long, right? 5D superyamidals on sigma. So now you get a five-dimensional gauge theory on this surface, which then, when the circles are becoming small, can be identified with this. But five-dimensional gauge theory, now this is a purely classical process. We have this infrared-free five-dimensional gauge theory, and we are putting it on a surface and looking what comes out. Roughly, this three-dimensional. In particular, if your surface has no holes, no handles, this calculation gives you something like a very simple interface where all these n gauge groups are identified at the junction. Because this description now in G-dual. So after this, we get the description. So this is a G-dual, yes. So it gives a description of the junction of the dual junction. So you get a very simple dual junction. So junction is the generalization of boundary, right? The boundary is something where the four-dimensional theory ends. The junction is a place where multiple four-dimensional theories can come together.
So another way to say what you said is that a junction is a boundary in the tensor product of a certain number of copies.
That's right. So this is an easy junction to describe. It's the sort of the diagonal embedding of G-dual inside the copies of G-dual. Various manifestations. And then this is the S-dual junction, which is very quantum mechanical, very complicated. But if you understand duality, you can map one to the other. Okay, predictions for this to be. And I think some of the things you see in the next few talks will be about that. And in discussion over food, it seems that it might be possible to also understand the construction of understand this construction, this explicit construction of the algebra, perhaps in a similar way. As the dual vertex algebra to some diagonal. Now, the general idea of relating Gaudí classes theories to 3D theories is also useful more generally to make connections between these five functor from 4D theories to chiral algebras and geometric Langlands applications. In the sense that, so this five functor sort of studies what goes on in parametric two. So that they deform the theory in some way, and then you, after the deformation, you have local operators that live in codimension 2, which form a chiral algebra. And morally speaking, after you come to final circle, you can work with the usual picture like this. And then this becomes the some situation where the 3D theory ends at some boundary. So now we have a 2D boundary for the 3D theory. And you find a vertex algebra here. So this construction gives a 3D interpretation of this. But now these 3D theories can be used for other purposes in geometric Langlands. And this boundary condition of 3D theories might be used to make things in geometric
Langlands.
So can you
repeat
just
the last bit?
Yeah. So I said the class S construction was telling you what lives in codimension 2 if you do a certain deformation of the formation of theory. This was the five functor that was deform the theory and look which vertex algebra of local operators live there. So the five functor sort of commutes its compactification to some sort of I3D functor, which says to take the 3D theory, pick some boundary condition, and look what lives there. Now, the 4D theories have a sort of special boundary condition, which is the one where you do nothing, you just put a cigar. For generic 3D theory, you might have to make more choices. So maybe this functor will not be exactly unique, there will be multiple boundary conditions. Still, the vertex algebras that live at this boundary would give you information about the 3D theory.
These the 4-0.
Hmm?
Which ones are these, the 4-0?
These are deformations of 4,0 boundary conditions. In the same sense as the junctions you find in the corner are deformations of 4,0 junctions. And indeed, if you are working at k equal to 0, you can make boundary conditions, so you put your 3D theory at the boundary, at the Neumann, sort of Neumann decorated by, modified by 3D theories. And then if you have this 2D boundary, you can promote it to a junction with Dirichlet in a pretty natural way. So I think this way you can sort of try to make circles of ideas which borrow from these. And from the vertex algebras that Karakawa was discussing, all these quasi-least vertex algebras, you can convince yourself that they have something to do with some 3D theory. Then they will also have something to do with boundary conditions in 4D. And they might, which means they might have an interesting I'm not exploring this question.
Do you know what exactly the deformation you have to apply to the 4D theory? So what do you have a description of that?
So in the original paper by Rastelli and all, they used the conformal algebra in an important way, which makes it very alien to standard optically twisted technology. Kevin has conjectured conjecture at some point that this would be equivalent to some kind of a to mirror of Nekrasov deformation.
Mirror.
Well, mirror is the wrong word. Somehow the Nekrasov deformation uses a topological twist by implicitly by SU2R. Even if it is U1R. It's not quite a topological twist, but you can try to make a supercharge with squares to your U1R transformation and mass rotation, maybe. But once you go on the cigar, it definitely seems to be the case that the deformation can become just the deformation of your boundary condition.
Doesn't affect the bulk?
Doesn't affect the bulk. Which again is familiar from Nekrasov deformation.
Right, but yes, but this is a different.
So I don't know how to go from here to here directly, but I know that I can do something here. So I can take the 4D theory, look at it as a 3D theory, trivially, dimensionally reduced, take a standard boundary condition, what you call a Neumann boundary condition for all the fields, and then deform it so that it becomes compatible with the topological twist in the bulk. And then you find the vertex algebra there, which is identical to the plus S vertex algebra in all the examples, so you can do the calculation. So.
Do you have some continuous parameter, like epsilon parameter, in this deformation?
Because it's a scale, so you don't really have it. No, I mean, so there is a family of supercharges in the bulk, which are all equivalent with each other, which topological theory they give you. And then they have a limit where they give it an holomorphic supercharge. So the original boundary condition is compatible with the holomorphic twist, and then you deform it to topological twist, if you allow. Not all boundary conditions can be subject to that. So anyway, so there is a ton of vertex algebras attached to the three theories that we want to work with Kevin, and that allows you to make this connection. I can say about this.
Did you see how, for example, CDO appears if you follow this logic?
Right, so let me see. So CDOs was associated
to a cylinder.
A cylinder. Like it becomes sort of the trivial interface. Right? Because which makes sense if you take this star G, so CDO is this star G. If you take this star G and you couple it to G on the two sides, you get a diagonal interface in these guys. So now I have the diagonal interface and I have Dirichlet and Dirichlet. I definitely know that there is a junction between Dirichlet and Dirichlet which supports CDO, which is the composition of Dirichlet to Neumann back to Dirichlet. Not 100% sure why. So at least the fact that you get CDO here is definitely compatible with the fact that you get CDO there. But I'm not sure I can say something very sharp. It's just the way to get the diagonal. So you mentioned there are some questions you wanted.
Yeah, so I have two questions.
So So one is very concrete mathematical, which is basically to combine my talk and Tomoyuki's talk. So let us be at generic level. So yesterday I wrote down some master chiral algebra, and apparently, so you guys can also write down something that plays the role of master chiral algebra, right? But it, by a different method. Can you say one more time what it is? Yeah.
The question was quick.
Yes, yeah. I said it's a mathematical question.
So I should probably.
Oh, yeah.
Should be back.
On the microphone just for that.
Yeah, I don't know if this arrangement with the microphone is going to work. So.
Well, one thing I should say is that if you do the correct composition, if you do, depending on which junctions you compose to get the junction, the universal, the junction between Dirichlet and dual of Dirichlet, you might get a vertex algebra that should look like yours, or not.
But in a particular way.
Right.
What is invariant? You'll get different vertex algebras.
That's right. Which are supposed to give the same, they have the same conformal blocks.
Same spaces of conformal blocks.
That's right. As the modules on Benji.
That would be my next question.
Right. So typically, okay. So if you take some boundary condition and Dirichlet, you'll find that at the corner some vertex algebra, which has a Kasmoudi subalgebra. I should put the K up. Which might or not have the same level as the gauge coupling in the bulk, but the level will differ from the gauge coupling of the bulk by an integer multiple of the minimal amount. So the conformal blocks for this A will give you on the nose a module shape twisted by a shifted amount. But then you can tensor it with the line bundle to the appropriate power to go to the place where you want to be.
I assume that comes in automatically, doesn't it? It must not be that you put that in by hand.
At the moment, I pretty much put it by hand. Yes. It's because somehow the boundary condition might have an anomaly, an extra contribution to the anomaly. After all, if you give me a junction, I could always add up some holomorphic theory that just lives at the junction and does nothing. And this will shift this level. The holomorphic theory will have conformal blocks which are one-dimensional. They're trivial, but they look like this. So if I have an holomorphic theory, I mean a true Schrödinger theory, not something that lives at the boundary or something else, it has no conformal blocks. But the partition function is still a section of a line. So that's why I feel that this I don't think I can ask for more than this. Okay, so once we're.
What I thought you'd been trying to say was that B might contain a Chern-Simons coupling at integer level, which you somehow hadn't detected in the computation.
No, I wanted to say that there are a variety of junctions between B and Dirichlet.
Yes.
And I can, if you give me a junction, I can make a new junction by just putting there another Schrödinger theory, a true Schrödinger theory. And I won't be able to, whatever prescription I give should be invariant under that operation. So now, if you compose junctions from Dirichlet to Neumann to Nam to the dual of Dirichlet, then I can. So I know that at this junction I find G, VG.
What you're doing is factoring it in steps, each of which has a simple description.
That's right. Here I know I get W algebra. And here I found I can map this junction to just this part of the junction via duality to the junction between Neumann and Dirichlet, which means I find the vertex algebra of minus, or minus, 1 over k, okay, g dual. Right. And then you do the extension, you extend along Kasten-Lustig. Meaning you sum over lines.
But that looks exactly what I wrote.
That's right. So this way of realizing the junction gives what you have. Now, in gauge theory, it has some features which are less nice than one might want to, in the sense that this composition of junction is fine in the topologically twisted theory. But you might have asked if this makes sense in the physical theory. And it sort of doesn't. So if you try to realize these junctions in the physical theory, you sort of had to turn by 90 degrees at each step in some sense, really geometrically. And if you turn around 90 degrees three times, you're not getting something sensible, right? It's like you're trying to do something like this, and then with the theory living here, and then turn, and then turn, and then right. You cannot do that. If you look at the dimension of the modules that you are building, right? So we had the kappa lambda times some t lambda check times v 1 over m kappa lambda check. So you can measure, you can compute the dimension of this.
I mean the conformal dimension.
The conformal dimension. That's right. There is a very nice simplification, and if I remember it correctly, but don't quote me on this, it looks like this. So it's negative. So I'm trying to compute the dimension of the highest weight vector inside this module that I'm adding. And it depends on the weight and the co-weight. And take the inner product and put the minus in front. So this is an unpleasant feature for vertex algebra. It means that it is unbounded from below. I mean, from above. I mean, the dimensions are unbounded from below. If I wanted to describe the OPE, so this vertex algebra, it would be hopeless because the OPE of two operators could contain arbitrarily sequence of other operators with arbitrarily bad divergence. So I can surely, I'm sure that one can do calculations using this definition, but if somebody gives me the vertex algebra without this presentation, I mean, for example, the property of the category of modules to this vertex algebra, I assume, will not be as nice as they could be for a vertex algebra which has all positive scaling dimension. For example, I don't think you can define. Can you still define highest weight modules if the. So.
Is there a problem in defining the space of conformal blocks?
No, it's just abstractly defined without any reference to them.
Say that again, sir.
Conformal blocks are defined for any vertex algebra. We don't need to know anything about conformal dimensions. I'm not guaranteeing that they're finite. finite dimensional, but as a vector space, it exists.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I don't know.
So maybe it's an elementary point that I never understood in my life. So maybe just say you have a vertex algebra.
Yes.
So it's generated by some fields and they have a certain conformal dimension.
Yes.
So when you consider, just an example, consider Kac-Moody vertex algebra.
Yes.
So it's generated by, what do you call it?
Occurrence.
Occurrence for G.
Yes.
And then, well, it has, it's like looks like a pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
So there are all these elements in the vertex.
Yes.
It's vertex algebra. So these elements, you count their dimensions as bigger or smaller.
Bigger.
Bigger.
Yes.
So like the T inverse has for you degree one.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So now the problem is that these guys start below zero.
Yes.
And what's the general property saying that you cannot guarantee the OP?
Well,
so what kind of OP?
So for example, when I describe Kac-Moody as a physicist, I say, oh, I have this current and they have OP. And then I can stop here. And this captures the whole, everything I might possibly want to know. But why does it stop? It stops because everything else has dimension bigger than one, and so can only appear in the regular part of the OP. If I had an operator of dimension minus 50, well, it could come here with over z minus w to the 52, versus 48, sorry.
Are we behaved by the weights? In other words, if you multiply two of given weight,
right?
Presumably, operators of very high weight can't come in.
Well, is this obvious? No, it's not.
It's not true because the weights are in the V lambdas.
That's right. This I don't think so. You can get very negative powers, I think, in the OP.
So I must say that mathematically, Sam, maybe you can comment. I don't see any significance in this series to be finite. So not significance.
It's
I'm not saying
finite.
Pardon? It is not finite.
But
the series is never finite.
No, but the singular part is finite.
The singular part is finite. That's always true. It's just, it's OPE. The singular part is, like, you don't have... You have Z minus W in the denominator.
Mm-hmm.
And Z minus W to the 1 million in the denominator, but not 1 billion, right? That's kind of finiteness.
Okay, so this, you're saying that finiteness is obvious here?
It's obvious for any vertex algebra.
Okay.
The other direction, I've never seen any...
No, I don't care about the other direction. My problem was having things, arbitrary number of things.
Oh, that's
here.
That's guaranteed for a vertex algebra axiom.
But
to do with vertex.
But here I only have this, you see, here I have these generators.
Yeah.
And everything else, I don't care. There is a lot of other operators in the vertex algebra. But once I understand these generators with the closed OP, I'm fine.
Why? What causes it to be bounded below here?
Again, below meaning the singular parts, right?
Yes.
It's a vertex algebra axiom. It's just, so I'm not saying how many there are, but like there are finitely many.
But is the vertex algebra finitely generated?
Nothing to do.
Right, so here it's, what is the correct term, right? When you have a finite set of currents that generate everything. Strongly finitely generated. Okay, this is likely not strongly finitely generated.
Probably that's correct.
And I would like to give, I mean, in a physics, it would be nice perhaps to have one that is strongly finitely generated.
Possibly, but all I'm saying is that for OPEs, OPEs is well defined regardless.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. So I don't think this is bad in any way. It just has a feature that physically is unpleasant. But
were you going to show us another construction?
That's right. So now you have all these other duality images of Neumann. Let me just assume I'm working with GLN or E8, but this can be done for all groups with variants, with modifications. So I can take Dirichlet, go to N, I think it's 1 minus 1, and then Neumann. So this is understandable because it's the T image of Dirichlet to Neumann. Sorry, I want to say dual of Dirichlet. On the other hand, this is related by S to something that goes between Dirichlet and N11, and then by T inverse to something that goes between Neumann and Dirichlet. So this is understandable. And it looks like V at level kappa plus 1 times, now G and G dual are the same, I'm working with GLN, times V at level kappa inverse plus 1 of G, extended by product of modules. In the usual way.
And then there's some reduction you need to take, right? Because when you compose these things,
I need to take the tensor product over some category of lines. So it means that the actual algebra is going to be the sum over products of modules. And so this algebra has all positive dimensions, among other things. So delta lambda is C2 lambda.
Sorry, what is your algebra?
It's the sum of products of wild modules with the same weight, pretty much, well, dual weights, and levels k plus 1 and k inverse plus 1. The reason this is a vertex algebra is that somehow the braiding of these modules is controlled by e to the 2 pi I over k plus 1. And the braiding of these modules is controlled by e to the 2 pi I over k inverse plus 1. And the product of these two numbers is 1.
So I have two mathematical questions about this. First of all, so it would be nice if we could give a vertex algebra structure kind of a priori, not summing over lambda, but
right,
Looking at one shot, like, here's a vertex algebra.
That would be great.
Is that possible? Or not yet?
For SL2.
No, in general.
For GL2, no.
Not yet. Yeah?
That's right.
Okay, so now I have one more request. Can we put Tomoyuki's theorem on the board for generic kappa next to it? Just, can you cite it again? Your theorem for W. Can you put it on the board?
Just in the actually, can I say one thing? It's this way you said it's not quite correct. The only sum of the Kasha and Lustig that are exactly in the root letters. So this, if you take this product, you get exactly Tomoyuki's formula, except that it's the DS reduction.
I mean, I'm working for UN, for GLN.
Yeah, just can we see one more time his theorem, his second theorem for generic kappa? Next to it, I
wanted
to compare how it looks like.
He wants to see the coset. The coset formula for the W algebra.
Wait,
Dennis, which theorem do you want?
Second theorem.
The coset.
Coset theorem.
Ah, right. So it's.
mu lambda?
Zero to lambda.
Zero lambda. And n means?
Okay, I don't know.
Kappa. It's a level.
That's right.
And psi in relation to chi of psi and kappa?
Yeah.
So this psi is going to be the same as my kappa, and this kappa is. So kappa was what is psi?
Changed to your head.
So let's write kappa in terms of psi first.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was, remind me.
Psi over psi plus.
Psi over psi plus one. But of course, I could revert it and work with GLN.
Yeah.
So I
if
could.
You're writing it as 1 over 1 plus 1 over psi.
That's right. So I could revert and write psi inverse plus 1 and then call this kappa. So indeed, a nice property of this algebra is that if you do the Dirichlet solo coreduction of one side, it goes to Kasmoudi times something trivial. So
this is exactly
Dirichlet solo coreduction in the second factor of A, that's right, equal V kappa of G tensor L1 of G.
So now to make you have the theorem which also expresses the W algebra as a coset. Right? How does that play out here?
This is essentially that.
So
saying that this is a that the double algebra is a coset is the same as saying that there is a an expansion like this. Because the coset is defined as the commutant of the vacuum module.
So is there a relation between this and what you're saying before?
Yes. The word Dirichlet solo coreduction is essentially replace Dirichlet with num. So say replace this with num, and then you get W algebra plus Kasmoudi, giving you an alternative a junction between num and in dual of Dirichlet, but it's the same as Neumann and Dirichlet. Yes.
So there's a construction on the left.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was some kind of different construction.
That's right. So these algebras are different.
They're different. I suppose they're somehow varied equivalent in some sense.
Well, so conformal blocks of this algebra are going to live in the mode shifted by one. Right, so you're gonna have to tensor it with L inverse on both factors. And then conjecturally, this will be the same as chiral cohomology of the master chiral algebra.
So let me balance back the question that you asked me yesterday.
Yes.
So I would like to compute endomorphisms of the vacuum module for this.
Mm-hmm.
So the vacuum module for this lives in Kajda-Lustig category for G and G check.
That's right.
And let me compute endomorphisms of the vacuum module within this category.
Yes.
So you can think of this as a chiral algebra within Kajda-Lustig G term check.
Right.
And I'm considering endomorphisms. So do you know the answer?
Well, with Thomas, we've been trying to compute it from the explicit expression of the vertex algebra for SU2. And we're getting this. I mean, there are some subtleties. Depending on the category in which you do the calculation, you can get other than a potent orbit, a one singularity, this is what I like, or the Lie algebra of SU2, pretty much. There is a little. I mean, there are some subtleties. When you compute the endomorphisms, you need to compute them in some category of modules,
right.
And figuring out what is the correct category has been a tricky business.
Let me ask a simpler, more basic question. Let me consider modules
Yes.
For this algebra within cardinalistic on one side. So I put modules for this chiral algebra. I'll impose that with respect to G, the RG of O integrable.
Mm-hmm.
For master gives you D modulus and affine Grassmannian for G dual. What do you see here?
I don't think I can answer this question.
The question is okay, yeah?
I guess.
Yeah, so the question makes sense to you.
Right. I mean, I can tell you what the algebra is for SL2 or for PSO GL2 or SL2, but...
I'll have a hard time computing that.
Right.
But the question is sensible to you.
I think so.
So, but it would be nice to... So.
There's also the question of what the associated variety is of this when you take kappa equal to 0 or minus 1 or whatnot.
That's a different question, but I'm interested in the category of modules.
Yes.
With respect to one of the G's, I want it to be G of O integrable.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm testing Sasha's question if this is Morita equivalent to mine.
Yes.
So the algebra is different, but the categories of modules might still be the same.
Mm-hmm.
And the first test would be take G of O integrable ones and see if you get the category of D modules in the affine Grassmannian for the dual.
Yes.
And so.
That's right. Well, what I can say is that this category by construction has D modules labeled by Schuh elements in the affine Grassmannian. Right. There is definitely a functor from dk plus 1 gr g times dk inverse plus 1 grg to a mod. But this is just by this construction. It's automatic.
Namely, I'm not saying...
You can just twist the vacuum. I mean, the point is that there is a right, there is a functor from d gr times Cazon-Lustig to v to Kasmudi modules, right? So these two commute.
Oh, of course. There is one, yes. Action on the vacuum.
Right.
There's vacuum, there's action on it, and you get this.
That's right.
Correct.
So I think it's almost like. Well, I don't know if the...
The functor exists.
Yes, that's right.
Now I'm using only the first copy.
Yes.
And I'm asking if this is an equivalence.
And that I don't know how to...
Yeah. Okay.
But I suspect it's probably going to be automatic from the construction. Now, this is important, though. This tells you that home from Whittaker to A mod is D.
Oh, can you say that one more time?
Right. So, Dreyfus solo co-reduction of A. DS A mod is home from Whittaker to A mod, right?
Yes, yes.
But it's also the same as VK mod, because this one has only one module itself. So this has the property of mapping Whittaker to...
Correct.
Right. Both ways, because it's symmetric.
Which this makes it very likely that the answer is affirmative. Because basically, we know the Whittaker model of this category. It is super close to knowing the category itself.
Okay.
So this possible
Morita
equivalent
between
this Morita algebra doesn't have anything to do with
Aragao's
theorem.
You mean this
theorem? Yes.
No, this theorem is this. Is literally the same theorem.
Well,
okay, at least. Yeah.
One implies the other.
It's something.
Right. Mm. It is literally the same. I mean, if you assume, I'm assuming that Dreyfus solo co-reduction commutes with extension along Kasdan-Lustig, which I think is true, because of this. But, so in a sense. Well, because the Dreyfus solo co-reduction of this just replaces this module with the W algebra module. And so it gives this. So essentially, what this algebra does is the following. Sort of, you have W algebra. You can get there by tutoring few solo co-reductions. And this is sort of trying to sit to close the square in the minimal way.
Can I ask, so following up and ask this question, do you think modules for this algebra is T of G?
Explain what you mean by T of G.
Module for this, okay. At k equal to 0, modulus of this vertex algebra should be lines in T of G.
What do you mean by lines in T of G?
Line operators, the category of line operators. I should stress that in the picture I was drawing all the way there.
T of G is a topological with 3D theorem.
That's right. So,
and it has no kappa.
No, that's right. So T of G is going to give me some vertex algebra. Okay. At the boundary, which coincides with A at kappa equal to 0. Coincides, I mean, you need to define this properly because one of these levels is going to infinity. You are replacing the wild modules by just finite dimensional representations, and then the statement is true. For SU2, for SUN, we are reasonably convinced.
For this version of A?
That's right, for this version of A. Yes, because this is a physical construction, it produces vertex algebra with positive dimensions.
And so this is defined in what generality?
So
is it just type A and EA?
So you can do something like this for any group, but it in the simplest, it gives you something like SMT to the NG SM. Now, if this is one and this is one, STS is the same as TST. And so you get the kernel up to T. Otherwise, it's a perfectly good duality. It's just not S.
Or you have to introduce the theta angle, right?
That's right. So you can try to build more complicated things. And if among these you find something of the form T to some power ST, which I think is going to be the case because this generates the group, then you will have your kernel. Now,
would you be back in the situation where you can't realize it physically because the atoms are too big?
Right, so that's a worry. So if these numbers are all positive, then you will. So, sufficiently positive. So there is a question which I don't know the answer of, if you can generate all that you want. It's a question about subgroups of SL2Z. I just have not thought about it well enough. Now, if you apply this to things like SL2, for example, you get something slightly more general than this. You get an extension of SL2 at level kappa plus 1 times SL2 at kappa inverse plus 1 times L1 of SL2. So there is an extension of the sum over lambda. So I need I'm going to use wild modules for these two. But now, depending on lambda being even or odd, I use one of the two modules for L1. Okay. This vertex algebra has some nice properties. For example, it uses representations of all weights for these SL2s. But because of this dressing, if you look at the subalgebra or level kappa plus 1 and kappa inverse plus 2, which is the diagonal of these two, then it only involves weights, even weights for this diagonal combination. And so it gives you a kernel for between SL2 and PSL2.
So if you can you spell out a little bit more how tell me how Arakawa's results connect like your master chiral algebra with Venice's? Like does it is
no.
this
No, it does not connect. I don't know how to connect these to that.
No. His result.
We can of course now apply the coset construction to the last two factors. Right, V lambda times L1 is the same as
Yeah, that's right. So in this case you can check.
Yeah, and so that means in this case we can also write it as like lambda T lambda mu times
that's right.
And,
that's right. So I mentioned that one of the consequences of starting to using T is that L tensor D is dual to L inverse tensor D. And you can so you can show it, you can take Holmes from this to this. That's the coset. And then you land here.
So one question. So suppose I want to do it at an not irrational level, suppose I want to do it specifically at an integral level.
Yes.
So of course you won't have this direct sum decomposition.
Yes. Well, but after I compute A, I can take the limit K to integer.
So you expect it to exist?
Yes.
That's basic.
See, this is a strongly finitely generated algebra. It has OPs, which has some rational functions of kappa. So for most kappas, you'll be able to define it.
So now, so do you expect it to have the same size kind of at kappa integral?
Well, for kappa integrals, I think so, yes. I would say it's the same vertex algebra. The only this vertex algebra, I think, behaves badly only at kappa goes to zero or infinity. But I've not.
So basically, the character should be the same across levels.
I think so.
And
because for SL2 you have like an explicit construction.
For SL2,
I thought you had an explicit.
Yes, that's right. It's
okay.
It's
so
that doesn't matter what it is, but somehow at least it's kind of depends nicely on kappa. So.
Okay.
That's right. So this is what's called D 2-1 minus kappa at level one. It's a
perfect. So now let me ask this. So take ds reduction
yes.
at an integral level. Do you still Does Arakawa's theorem apply to show that that would be Katsumori?
That I don't know. Yeah, so this theorem works for all levels, right?
No, but it looks different. No,
you can then quotient. You can. There is that first theorem was the simple quotient of the second theorem.
Yes, actually, I was going to.
It's integral k.
I was actually going to ask this during this talk, but somehow I didn't want to interrupt. So somehow this, in fact, there were two theorems. Somehow seemed so. I mean, I'm kind of puzzled by this because the size of the W algebra doesn't depend on the level, right? And so it's for integral level and for irrational level.
Simple.
It was only a statement for rational kappa. It was a statement about not about the W algebra itself, but about its simple
program. No, I stated two statements. The first one is for only for the rational.
Yes, but the left hand side, was it the W algebra or was it some quotient of the W algebra?
The first statement was a quotient.
Quotient, I see. Okay.
Okay. So.
But in this case, one can explicitly check it by hand, and then it works for all.
So we expect the ds reduction
yes.
of this will be Katsumori. So now I have a mathematical question, which is okay. Let me just try to say it.
Yes.
So now let me take it to Sam. So here's what I'm trying to test. Let's try to see if their algebra is actually better than ours. Like at an integral level, that it actually does Langmuir correspondence. So what I want to see is the following. So there is the following operation. So let it be an integral level. Okay.
So there are physical representations, I don't know how you know them.
You're putting the kappa down instead of half.
L category. Let me call it G of T ref level kappa. So then this kind of understood to me. There is the forgetful functor, and then the functor is called left adjoint. We denoted, sorry.
Kappa is a positive.
Kappa is an integer, so like
positive.
But it's, this category is well defined for any integer. It's non-empty, just it's behaves badly with respect to the T structure. So it has a T structure, but all objects trivial with respect to the T structure. For that reason, people classically don't see it. So if you want your objects to be compatible with T structure, I mean, if you want to see a million categories, let's be at the positive level, just simplified. So there is this functor in the opposite direction. Well, we have force averaging with respect to what remains, like G of K modulo G of O. All right, so for example, you could take the vacuum representation called the our notation. If you apply this, you'll get the integrable representation. Let me call it VK integrable. This is the integrable. That's the construction.
So this is a statement that the W model is somehow the sections on the Grassmannian.
Exactly that kind. All right, so now here's what I want to ask. So I have this A, so it has some levels. So, well, in fact, levels are 1 over kappa. Let's say we have for E8. Kappa is integral. So what I'm going to do, I want to do identity times this averaging. So I want to see, okay, simple terms, I want to see the integrable quotient with respect to the copy of Katsumudi where the levels will integral. I want to see what the integrable quotient of that looks like.
Idea. I only know what it looks like if both levels are admissible.
What do you mean admissible?
Admissible is what Tomiyuki wrote on the board. If kappa is of type U over V for positive rational numbers, at least the dual constant number.
Yeah, kappa is an integer.
Yeah, no, I know. Anyway, this is not your question. But it's a similar one.
Yeah, so I'd like to. Well, it's a question, but I'd like to know the answer.
Can you explain why you're asking this question?
Yeah. Yes. So, okay. So once you do this,
I guess you have W algebra built into your master chiral algebra, so you're never going to see things about integrable quotients. And what you're asking is, like, does this algebra know things?
Oh, I want to be more precise. So,
does it know something non-tempered?
Yeah. So this will capture the non-tempered part that our thing doesn't capture. I wanted something more precise. As far as I understand, I have a mental block. This thing will tell me, okay, I can do this. Yeah, so consider modules for this.
Yes.
Consider modules for this. It's a category acted on by the other copy of Katsumudi group at level 1 over K.
Yes.
So I think more or less if this A does the trick, if it's really the Langlands transform. So the scattered that I get is the image under local Langlands of vect. So at the integral level, vect is a category.
Yes.
The definition of integral means that the vect is a category acted on by the loop group.
Mm-hmm.
So then I can take its image, and we know what it is.
Yes.
So, and the question. So,
I don't think the question even has a meaning in the language of brains, because this. I think the question even has a meaning in the language of brains, because this fact must be the dual Neumann, the alternative Neumann.
It's the alternative Neumann, yes.
And the other one must be the alternative Dirichlet, not none.
Yes.
And he's capable to zero.
So kappa equal to zero is for alternative Neumann. If you want to integrate kappa, you can take alternative N1, kappa. Neumann plus some kappa.
I'll get confused with typically zero infinity, but for this one, so I'm testing whether mortise for this is what we understand as the alternative now.
Yeah. And actually, and what do you know about this image effect on the Langmuir?
It's a question that I should be able to answer. I need to recall. I think we understand it. Right? Yeah, so that's
My suspicion that is completely unjustified suspicion is that somehow you get some kind of admissible.
And what does it have to do with capturing the non tempered part?
Well, it's non tempered.
I understand this also. But what is that? So you're saying that if you do it for your algebra, you get zero.
I'll get some kind of nonsense.
So you just get zero.
No.
No, it will not get zero.
Yeah, but.
So this algebra should be this. In the SL2 case, the simple quotient of D21 kappa.
Yes.
And what could this possibly be? So shall I write down a conjecture of what this could be? And then this is compatible with what I know for admissible.
You have that D1 minus kappa at level 1. So Davide wrote down.
What is D?
D is the D21. It's the exceptionally super algebra.
Oh.
This is a huge coincidence that helped Davide and me a lot. That we realized, so there's one exceptional family of these super algebras. It's a continuous family parameterized by a complex number kappa, and it's a 9+8 dimensionally super algebra. So it has 3 SL2s and then the tensor product of the standards. And it turns out for level 1, that is an extension of the 3 SL2s. And as in this extension, this is the formula that Davide wrote down. Now, what could possibly be the central quotient? Let's take kappa to be a positive integer. Then here, the v is replaced by its simple quotient. And this, instead of summing over all the positive weights, we only sum over those that are integrable with respect to kappa.
Once you take the simple quotient, you might want to change notation from critically shifted to normal level, so it becomes kappa minus 1.
For integer level, for SL2, only those weights that are between 0 and kappa minus 1 are integral weights. And so this means whatever the simple quotient is, that's the only thing that could possibly appear are these modules. And so since they pair with these ones, everything else should be just thrown away, live on the ideal proportion point. So my conjecture would be that if I denote by this the simple quotient of the universal affine UA, then as a module for the affine sub UAs, all I do is I replace the Weyl modules by the simple quotient and I restrict the direct sum to the integral high-spec modules of that way.
Now the middle one is admissible now.
Hmm?
Now the middle one is admissible.
The middle one is not admissible.
Well, it's a positive rational.
I mean,
for example, take I might be wrong, but take k equal to 2.
Is it
equal to true, you get.
Oh, it's sometimes admissible, sometimes not, right?
That's right.
Yeah, so that's correct. So if we take proper minus one to the integer, so then we have proper inverse plus one is equal to one over proper plus one. Right?
It's a
kappa inverse. That's
the relation. No. Take kappa equal to 2, right? So we have. If you can take kappa equal to 2.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They're admissible. That's true. Then I can even prove that statement.
Can you say the statement one more time? So integral quotient is the direct sum, which is I want to copy it.
Right, so I also put in. I'm a little bit confused at the moment. Give me 1 second. Davide reminded me, if I take for a kappa a positive integer, then actually kappa inverse is an integer is an admissible level. And for admissible level, there exists a. So let me prove the statement for admissible level. A level is called admissible if satisfies what you said in this talk, namely kappa is of type u over v for u and v co-prime integers at least 2. In this case, for example, and so kappa is a positive integer, then kappa inverse is admissible. And there exists a. And in that case, one can prove, and I will write down proof in a second, that this one is a simple but super algebra. And it's clearly a quotient of this one. The quotient is a simple quotient to me.
So again, in this simple superalgebra looks, again, can you say one more time how look?
This simple superalgebra is an extension of these three SL2s. And as a proof for these three SL2s, it is very, very similar to the summation that Davide wrote down, just that instead of summing here over all why not? I only solve over those that are integral modules that are modules of the simple VOA. And this means the summation of the basics here restricted from 0 to kappa minus 1. And it's and instead of having here the Y modules, I have the simple quotients.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And you want to see?
That statement is kind of automatic because all you do is just on the space of vertex algebra, you look at it as a representation of that copy of G where the level is kappa, and just as a representation, you apply this left adjoint, and all it does, it kills all the vials.
That's correct. The left adjoint, that's correct. It does that, yeah.
And that's what you get.
That's correct, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the fact that it looks like this, it's okay. Mm-hmm. So now, then my question is, I would like to see what modules look like for this thing.
So, in which category?
Just abstractly, it's a VOA.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see all modules.
All modules, okay. I don't
expect an immediate answer, but I mean.
I can think about it, and I can. Davide asked me a similar question. I can write down a few families. It might be nice, actually. Okay. But that's only a conjecture that I write down. And I think, actually, I think about it in a very similar way as you do. So I view the VOA of interest as an extension of the VOAs I know much better. And so this means I have an induction factor from modules of this VOA to modules of this, the bigger one, And if these models satisfy a certain condition, then they are Laupin models. That means they are actually models of the zoo. So this means what I have to do is I have to scan my zoo of models here for this condition that the parentheses need that they lift to UA models. And shall I explain this procedure, or just shall I say the answer?
So which, again, which procedure?
How to get UA modules from SL2, go from UA modules from SL2 times SL2 times SL2 to UA modules of the speed super.
Well, it's some fusion rules, right? It's like if you're fusing with a bunch of more modules.
Yeah, but let me just write it. I call this my algebra object, and it's a direct sum of mi of models of my smaller UA. So then I can take another model n, in the smaller UA, and there is the sum over all the usables in a certain subcategory. Here, the subcategory is all the models. So now I have kind of a class that does this. It makes this object n an object of the category of A modules and objects here. And it maps the object n to the fusion product of A with n. However, this one is not necessarily a module for the UA, but it is a module for the viewer A if n is in the centralizer of this category that I use here. So this is the condition I'm talking about. And centralizer means that the field of n has trivial monotony with all these n i that take the double gradient. So this is a general principle, and it allows me to find huge subcategories of modules of the big UA. So this means all I have to do is I have to scan the models I have now in here, whether they centralize the integral modules or dot or dot. And this is what I did yesterday, so I can let you go. That's your formulas. So here SL2 at this level. I mean this integer level is boring in the sense that it's a rational UA, it's only the integral high-spec models, nothing else. This one is admissible, it's not an integer, but a positive rational number. And so this one turns out to have huge interest in famous models, and they have a chance to lift.
But I'm afraid that not most people will not. Maybe you can tell it to me privately, because I think most people.
No, I think you're probably right, but what I'm saying is that. So let's put it this way. The models are quite honest used to models in Kashan Mushik, or at least the models that are used to high spec models as to be reported down. And the models that you find here that lift, they are induced from what is called relaxed high spec models, from models that are neither highest nor lowest. So they appear, I think they are quite interesting, and these are the ones that one actually finds. And maybe I can tell you in private more about this type of stuff of modules. So, because these are types of modules that have not appeared in the discussion so far. But they appear in a very natural way. I mean, they are just modules of this. Yeah. And maybe I tell you that.
Yeah. What is when is lunch on the schedule?
I guess it's half an hour, so. That's weird.